o'clock, ladies and gentlemen. We are approaching the end of this series entitled Relationships in Halacha. As a matter of fact, next Motzei Shabbos will be the last in the series because we move the clock after that. And next Motzei Shabbos we're going to try to tackle the difficult topic of relationships between Jews and non-Jews. Whoa. That's even harder than this, but we'll try. And tonight we're going to continue what we started 2 weeks ago, the relationship of Torah Jews to non-observant Jews, which is also a very complicated topic. I copied for you two sides actually of a page from a sefer called the Bina of Adas, which I had in front of me, from Lamed Beis, Gimel, Dalet, and Hay. So this is page 35. I must tell you that I spent a lot of time reading this through the Sefer. I'm up to about page 280 or something like that. I'm just barely halfway through. This is a big book. A lot to talk about. But let us focus on what you have in front of you, which I think is going to be interesting in terms of his analysis, which again, not everyone has to agree to, but certainly gives us some food for thought. We had mentioned last time the famous Ma'amar of Chazal in the Gemara, Yisrael afal pi shechata Yisrael hu. A Jew, even though he sins, is considered to be a Jew. It's very, very important to realize that. Nonetheless, this author claims that this has nothing to do with the secular Jews of nowadays, because, quoting from Rabbi Chanan Wasserman in his Sefer, one of his Svarim that's printed in the Kovetz Mamorim, that was only individuals who believed in the fundamentals of the Jewish faith, but they were unfortunately sinning for their own personal pleasure. However, these days, when unfortunately so many of the members of Klal Yisrael have lost even their beliefs in the basics, perhaps these rules will not necessarily apply. This is a question of perspective. So let's take a look, as a matter of fact, into the source you have in front of you. Nonetheless, despite the fact that he's a Yisraelu, that means that Hashem loves Am Yisrael, no matter what. It's very important to understand. We believe that Bonim Atem Hashem Elokeichem. You are children of Hashem, your God. And we paskin that Benkach Hu Benkach Kuriyim Bonim. Whether they're doing Ritzon Hashem Elokeichem or not, whether they are good Jews or not good Jews, we're still sons of Hashem. So from Hashem's perspective, a member of Yisrael that sins is still considered to be Yisrael. But how do we relate to that individual? That's still not clear. As we start on top of page Lama Dalet, Ein Bekach Mishem Horo L'Dar. Everyone has in front of you, Lama Dalet? Right? Ein Bekach Mishem Horo L'Dar Ke Yisnagas Shalonum Ketza Desyachas Yisrael Achote. In other words, that's a very nice agadic statement that he's considered to be Jewish and Hashem loves him very much. Unconditional love, alright, very nice. But how we deal with him is something of a completely different nature and cannot necessarily be derived from an agadic statement that even if a Yisrael sins, he's considered to be a Yisrael. He's considered to be Jewish. This is true. But how we relate to this with this Jewish person is problematic. Problematic. Now, so let's read. Gam, the next line. Gam ba'ofen shechuchra dino kemumar. Even if we can view him as a mumar, in contrast to last time we spoke about the possibilities of Tinoch Shenishba, and he's not considered to be someone who rebelled. He didn't rebel himself, his father brought him up the wrong way. But even in the worst case scenario, where he's considered to be in the category of a mumar, we still have to take care of him, or maybe take care of him for a number of reasons. One, Darkei Shalom. Darkei Shalom. That means we're supposed to take care of peaceful relationships with Darkei Shalom. Interesting, even with respect to a non-Jew, footnote Sadi Dalet says, we'll discuss the Blinetta next week, is a concept of Darkei Shalom. And the question is raised by one of the comment with today's contemporary authorities, top of column 2 in the footnote, called the Pischei Choshen, Rav Bloy, who lives in Yerushalayim today. One day I was visiting my son Akiva, he says, that's Rav Bloy. He has to walk for reasons of health. He walks around the block and he passes in front of Akiva's house every night. And I want to give him shalom. Don't give him shalom, just give you a grunt. He's too busy thinking about his learning. He's one of those people who learns all the time. Someone's holding his hand and he's walking. I saw him right in front of my nose. let him walk. So don't try to disturb his thought process. He's such a prolific writer. So he has in Pischei Choshen, in Ilchos Aveda. What about Yisrael Mumor? Is there Darkei Shalom? Is the Kiddush Shem Shemayim? We have it with respect to Hashavas Aveda, even by a non-Jew. We'll discuss that between that next week. If you can sanctify Hashem's name, you should give back a lost property, even of a non-Jew. What about a Jew who rebels? Is he in the same category? Says this author of Bina Vadas, it's a Mishnah in Gittin. Mash eles isha lechaverta chashuda la shvius. In other words, what does that mean? You may lend to your friend who is not observing the laws of Shemitah. You may lend them a certain kitchen implement with which they're going to use the Shemitah produce in an improper fashion. So therefore you have this concept of Darkei Shalom, not only with respect to a non-Jew, but with respect to a Jewish person who has rebelled against the path of Judaism. And therefore, there's a requirement of the Darkei Shalom to give him Parnassa as well. Something interesting question, how far we go with this issue. So, but let's be real. It has to lead to Darkei Shalom. That's footnote Tzadi Hei. Footnote Tzadi Hei quotes a whole series of sources with respect to non-Jews, right? But it has to lead to Shalom. So, in other words, if you look carefully in the original construct of non-Jews, the word im is found. You give parnassa to the non-Jewish poor with the Jewish poor. That implies, you know, if you're giving parnassa to everybody, you should not exclude the non-Jews. That would not be right. But what about if you're not giving to the Jews? Maybe you're not required to give to non-Jews by them, in and of themselves. So he writes in the last three lines of this page, it relates to milgos or shar hatovos. If it's included in the community, it's called imo. And it'll be a chil Hashem im lo yitnu gam lechilonim.
What's milgos?
It's scholarships, fellowships, stipends. You can't discriminate along those lines. That's number one. Let's continue the next page, page Lamed Hei. Mini is chil Hashem shuavon chomor. Okay? That means even if a person with this will be a very good introduction to next week's shiur. He says in footnote Sadivov, Hafkos Halvaasa. What does that mean? Shall go. Yes, I'm sorry.
Let's say this person is not from Jew and he has a death in his family and you would like to attend the funeral.
Right.
But it occurs in a conservative shul.
I'll give you my opinion on the matter. My opinion on the matter is it depends. There's no intrinsic violation because it's not a service, it's not a davening. Right? No one thinks they're going to daven there. It's clearly a funeral, not a prayer service, and therefore I believe it's permissible, with the exception that if you are a person of stature in your own community, maybe it's not a good idea for you to go. As a matter of fact, my Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik wanted to attend the funeral of someone who took place in the conservative shul, someone to whom he felt a debt of gratitude, and if you go to the Briskers, they're very, very strict when it comes to Hakaras HaTov. He stood outside in the rain for 2 hours under an umbrella. Didn't want to walk in. It was in Boston. I don't know if he would do the same thing if it were in, or maybe the Rav is famous, wherever he goes, everyone knows who he is. You know, but a plain person, even a plain rabbi, who wouldn't go into a conservative or reform place, a house of worship in his own community, would go elsewhere. For example, I'll give myself, I'm not such a big person, but I wouldn't go into the conservative or reform temple. I've been here, as I said, mentioned before, 35 years. I've yet to be in these buildings, and I have no intention of going in these buildings. But I mentioned in a past year that I was asked to conduct a wedding in a conservative or reform place in the Five Towns. I called a local rabbi, my friend. He said, the rabbis in the Five Towns go into these places because that's the custom there. So I did, because I might be holier than the rabbi in the town over there. Here, I believe that we should have a different approach. If you have to go to a funeral,
the reason is Darkei Shalom. So if even though you're well known in the community, how are you promoting Darkei Shalom if you don't go into their place?
I don't want to have Darkei Shalom with the conservative shul. Conservative shul is
what is the reason he's giving? He said
to the private citizens. We're talking about the institution, private citizens on the one hand, and institutions on the other hand.
I thought Darkei Shalom means like. Or even Chil Hashem, so that the whole community, their community, won't start saying, you know, like, we're not good enough, you know, like, they avoid us, they, you know, like...
They should say that. Institutionally, they should really... That's exactly the point. I would like them to say that. But not on a personal level. So, for example, if the funeral took place in Riverdale, in a funeral home, which I don't know if there is one, they went to Riverside, down in where else, Hirsch, I would certainly go, in that kind of a case. Or if it took place in a conservative reform beyond Riverdale, somewhere in New Jersey, in Massachusetts, whoever it was, and I had some kind of a family, I would go. Not what I did. But it was a totally different situation. There was a private citizen far from the community. That's how I have sliced that one. It's not easy to make this decision. I'm sure the others disagree on both sides. Others wouldn't go anywhere. Others would go in their own communities. So I'm just giving you how I've handled that situation. Let's go on. So, hafkos alva, which means not repaying a loan, is technically permissible, but may not be done if the non-Jew knows about it because of Chilul Hashem. Right? And Chilul Hashem, therefore, you have to be careful with respect to a non-observant Jew, certainly so. And even something which is, technically speaking, permissible could cause a Chilul Hashem. If a person does not pay his meat bill on time, the quotes of Gemara in Yuma. Or if a person isn't honest in his dealings, or is not speaking politely to people, that can also cause what we call a Chilul Hashem. To be so, so careful. So, so careful. The Rambam, he's quoting the Rambam here in column one in the footnotes over here on this page. You have to go to Fnim Mishura Sadin. And to quote the Rambam further, he should speak politely to people, and should be nice to people, and smile at people. And if they insult you, don't insult them back. And you should give honor to those who are not giving you honor. And be honest. But at the same time, he says, don't sit for long times at meals with Amei Haaretz, because if you're sitting with them, it's not add honor to who you are. Rather, you should be busy with Torah, with Tzitzis, and Tefillin, and do Lifnei Mishur HaSadin. But at the same time, Lo Yisrachek Harbe Mehem, don't become a hermit. For Lo Yishtomeim, don't become someone who is in the middle of nowhere. Rather, you should be in a place where Hakol Mekalsen also, Umisavin Lamasav, everyone praises him, and want to be like him. That's a Kiddush Hashem. Avdi Atah Yisrael Hashem B'chores Far. That's a beautiful, beautiful Rambam. And then he quotes in the Geres Hashmad, the Rambam. Again, this is column two. A important person who deals with individuals in an inappropriate fashion, and he greets people with anger and with degradation, and he's not friendly with people, and he's not, considered Urim Abrios, and he's not with Midos Yekoros Vahagunos, with their exemplary character traits. Chilas Hashem! It's a Chilas Hashem. He didn't do anything wrong, technically speaking. He didn't violate any one of the 613 commandments. It's a Chilas Hashem. And the other way, if he did it right, so then it's considered to be a Kiddush Hashem. This is very, very important to understand, that every person according to his own standing, who he is, has to be careful. So therefore, this has to be taken into account whenever we are involved in any of these decisions, even if we're not, technically speaking, required to help somebody, because technically speaking, it's considered to be a mumar. Nonetheless, it's permissible to help him to avoid what's considered to be a chilul Hashem. Again, we have principles, and we have darkei shalom. We have to draw a balance between the two. The Chazon Ish, that very same source that was quoted earlier about the Shvius, he has a beautiful, almost poetic description of the balance of Chazal, shoklu bepeles, with a scale to know what is important to do to make shalom, and what cannot be done to, because you want to say that Shemitah has to be kept. It's a balance. So everything in life is a balance. Let's go on. Gimel. Because if a person will decide he's going to be very, very tough on individuals who are not observant, guess what's going to happen? He'll begin to develop bad midos. He'll become a Baal Gaiva. You know, I'm great because I'm frum. You're not. Or Azus Ponim will become insolent. Or Kas, he'll develop anger. Gam lo osan shen, quote, chiyuv, end quote, hatova kalapeyim. It's not, these are bad character traits. Bad character traits are something which we should try our very best to avoid. To avoid. How bad is Chilul Hashem? So he quotes, before he turned the page, of course the Chazon Ish is quoted, Chilul Hashem is worse than the three cardinal sins. Incredible. How far do we go? That's hard to know. Let's turn the page to see first the footnotes. The footnote, Sadi Ches, the first footnote on page Lamed Vav. He quotes the Mishnah Berurah, the very first siman in the Shulchan Aruch. Midos ha'azos meguna ma'od. Insolence, chutzpah. Does everyone have it? Page Lamed Vav? You don't have page Lamed Vav? Oh, Lamed Beis. I have to apologize. I went out of order. Okay, I apologize. Okay, then you know what we're going to do? We'll go back. I'll just finish this, then we'll go back to Lamed Beis in a minute. I made a mistake. Over here he says, you don't have it in front of you, I'll be Mekater, that the Midah of Azus of being a Chutzpahnik is bad. It's bad, and it's just something we should try our very hardest to avoid. So we shouldn't be kapdonim. We have to be very careful in how we deal. Let's try to be with shalom and with everybody. So therefore, we have to try to draw this difficult balance. But let's go back to page Lamed Beis, which I inadvertently had skipped over. So I apologize. I already read to you page Lamed Gimel. I didn't realize you had it because I was off by a page. So Lamed Gimel, we read before Yisrael b'shechot Yisraelu. And we discussed that in column 2 of page Lamed Gimel, we quote Rabbi Chanan, that's over here, that he said that maybe nowadays it would not apply to the secular community because they've lost even the basic faith in Judaism. But we still have time to discuss the previous page. Yesh Omrim, page Lamed Beis. Shebizmanenu yesh linok chiyuv echeset kalapayim af im lo ninkot shedinon ketinik shenishba. Two things. Number one, what he's saying is that even if we're going to assume that one of two things, that either this person is not a tinok shenishba, that's a term for those who weren't here last year, a tinok shenishba is literally a child, an infant, that was taken captive by non-Jews, Levena Akum, knows nothing about his or her Jewish roots, but at the same time is considered a completely Jewish person who's blameless for anything which they did bad. Right? So the big question we spoke about last year, whether the secular Jews nowadays, given the amount of knowledge that they're privy to, because everything's out in the open, in the media, and in the blogs, everyone knows everything now, what's going on. Maybe they don't have a status of Tinah Shanishva. Maybe they do, because they weren't trained in the youth, and the Rambam writes, even if you weren't trained in youth, you'll find out later on, that you're still Tinah Shanishva. This we spoke about last year. But even assuming that they're not a Tinah Shanishva, or even if you assume that there is no obligation to take care of a Tinah Shanishva, nonetheless, nowadays you should do chesed. Now that question, of course, becomes why? We don't really understand why. So let's first, since we have this in front of us, let's first see what is the what the halacha is. Let's understand that the obligations of lahachyoso come from achicha, according to some. I'm starting the footnote on top of page Lamed Beis. Achicha, with respect to lahachyoso, to help him survive. It's called V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. Okay, all this is very, very important. And the question then becomes, how far do we go? We don't know exactly. He's considered to be a Yisrael. But how far do we go? So we're not sure. We don't know what kind of status a typical secular Jew has nowadays. Now the Chazon Ish is the one who said that he has a status of Tinok Shenishbo. This is what... they quote from Rabbi Chaim Kanievsky. Quote, Hachilonim dehayom for asom hachazanish tinoka shenishbu. Chutz mi ben Gurion. I think I mentioned this last time. That was just, he was the one who was brought up properly and rebelled. But the average person is considered tinoka shenishbu. Comes up with Yoshev and says, I found a manuscript from the Chazanish, which indicates that he did not say it definitively. That's footnote Peva. The Chazanish, they found a... He printed it now in Tovshin Nun, 1990. That's, that's almost 40 years after Chazanish passed away. They found one of his manuscripts. And what does it say over there? The Bishul in a Beis Charosha Shal Enam Shomer Torah. Some say it's called Bishul Akum. It's a big dispute. If a non-observant Jew cooks, is that considered Bishul Akum or not? So some say yes and some say no. So the Chazanish said that you have to watch out. Maybe it's Bishul Akum. So Shamati b'shem Grisha Shlit, that's Rabbi Yashiv. The Mimichtav Zemuchach the Gam Chazanish Lo Sava Sheesh Tintinok Shnishba Lekula. In other words, he said he's not sure. maybe the Tina Shinishba, so therefore you can't do anything bad to them. But on the other hand, he wasn't sure, and for this reason he was also careful with the possibility of Bishalaka. Okay, I just want to show you over here when it comes to the Chiyuve Chesed. How do you say that? Let's take a look over here in footnote Peches. This will be our final footnote that we're going to read together, and then we're going to rest of the shiur will be sort of we'll call about Torah Shel Ba'al Peh. Yeah.
I'm not sure. Bishalakam. I'm not sure. Why did they make that kazera? Isn't it because of it's like it's not like Yain Nesef where there was an Avodah Zarah concern.
Because you shouldn't marry their daughters.
So.
A good question. Are you allowed to marry the daughter of someone who was a apocryphal?
So there are two answers. That you shouldn't meet another Jew because.
So there are two answers to your question. It's a very good question. Some say yes, you can't marry the daughter of a non-firm Jew. Yeah, they say yeah, they answer yes. And even those who say no, say that once they made this rule of Mechal Shabbos Dino Ka'akum, which is found in the Gemara and Erevin, then that's it. They made a kind of a low plug. Even though the reason does not apply, allowed to marry his daughter, he still can't have his cooked food. Others are lenient. But I'm just giving this in context. Let's read. Mesupa lagrachmi brisk. Rav Chaim Brisker. Shetorach lahatil bundist. What's a bundist?
Communist.
Yeah, kind of a communist. The bund was a socialist. Okay. They certainly were very far from the Jewish religion. But often shukorach bechil yom kippur. I heard the story from my Rebbe. Rav Chaim came to Kol Nidre. And they whispered his ear, a certain member of the Bundistin was taken, captured by the authorities, and they're going to send him to Siberia, who knows what, they might kill him. Rav Chaim would not allow them to say Kol Nidre. He said, Evan, go home on Yom Kippur and bring me money to redeem this guy from jail. Can you imagine if I got up, what did they throw? They throw the eggs at me. They had any eggs. Maybe he got up and shul on the Kol Nidre, said, Evan, go home, get your money, Bring me the money, so I can bring the money to redeem this guy from jail who's a Bundist. So he asked him. The Rambam says, Dino Kagoy. So Rav Chaim supposedly answered, the idea of Moridin is, quote, B'chidei lahatzil es hatzibur mehefzer emunah. Like the Chazanish said later. It's a preventive device. You have to set this guy aside because he's the only one who's breaking the barrier and it could lead to others following in his footsteps. So just set him aside. But that was then. Ka'es, ein zet zorech ashok kiyesh harbe kamohu. The majority is like him, right? V'ein bisoso malo morido. Right? It doesn't make any, it quotes the word of Buchim. Morido is not a punishment, just to get rid of the kofim, so it shouldn't destroy the rest of the community. And he quoted the Shita Baba Kama. U'dvarim elu kulam tzrichim laharbas b'umdenos. Shil mozne ha'iyun mechuvenes b'hem ben chachomim gedolim ha'mevinei mado. Ula'olam al yu raglayim shaladam and maram lishpok dam. Woo! Don't run to put someone into a pit. Of course, it's from a brisker sefer. Same thing of Chaim Zonnefeld. There was somebody who was a masis neged hadas. He was a person who tried to get others to leave religion. He was very sick. He tried to get him to the hospital. Tried to save his life. He's a kanoim. Rav Chaim was a kanoi. Rav Zonnefeld was a kanoi. I'm talking about something coming out of a moderate rabbi over here. A Jewish life is a Jewish life. And it goes further. This is a column 1 of page Lamed Gimel. Quotes the Chazon Ish again. There's no longer Morinim aimed at Tikkun HaPirtza. He thinks that the Chazon Ish and Rav Chaim are saying two different things. But they're basically saying really the same thing. That Rav Chaim extended the Chazon Ish's idea not only to the Morinim but to other halachos as well. Again, so Reb Chazon Ish called him a Tinei Shenishba. Reb Chaim said, even if he's not a Tinei Shenishba, you still have to save him. You still have to save him. He asked a question against Reb Chaim. All right, you're not allowed to kill him. Who's going to have to go save him? And the Michal Yom Kippur to save him, as a matter of fact. So Reb Chaim apparently holds that it's a mitzvah lahatzil mumo l'teyavo. Someone who sins for the sake of his own desires, it's a mitzvah to save him. And nowadays, for the reasons which he said earlier, they're all considered to be mumah l'teyavon. They're no longer considered to be mumah l'hachas. They're not principled enough to be mumah l'hachas. Ad kan from Rav Chaim. So we see here, to summarize, that there's a tremendous question which we did not resolve last time, it's still unresolved, whether the typical secularist today, secular Jew, it's considered to be a mumor or not. Some say they're considered a tinek shenishbo, the equivalent. We can't resolve that question. But even if you'll assume that we'll call it the worst case scenario, that he has the status of a mumor, nonetheless, apparently there is a mitzvah to save him because of a two-step. One, that today we consider even the worst non-observant Jew to be what we call a mumor l'teyavo. Not really, he wasn't brought up well enough that we can consider him a lahachasnik. Lahachasnik means he was brought up properly, and now he's rebelling. That's what I'm assuming, that we don't consider him a mumor l'teyavo. Okay, even if he was brought up semi-properly, but his desires get the best of him, and he wants to become a non-observant Jew, either to make a living, to work on the Shabbos, or he likes to train for food, whatever. He has desires. But we pass in Halacha and Shulchan Aruch that such an individual must be saved. You have to save him, and you have to do other favors for him as well. Yes, sir.
It seems like the two people, though, that the stories were talking about, the Bundist and then the one who was were not just people who were brought up wrong, because they were actively attempting to get other people away from
despite that fact, Reb Chaim seems to say that even though you might view him as a lahakasnik, he says, Bismanenu is considered a mumul l'teyavo. This is Reb Chaim, said. He has a parenthesis, Bitam Shechidesh. Amashot Bitam Shechidesh means that what we have written here in this page or some other town. I'm not completely clear what he means by that. But for that reason, Chaim knew what he was doing. So therefore, and remember, this is only on the worst case scenario that he's not Tinish and Ishbo, but maybe he's a Tinish and Ishbo. So the bottom line is, you have to go and save every Jew. I have to tell you that the orientation of this Sefer, called Bina Vadas, is quite severe, if I may use that expression. Everything seems to be Asur until proven Mutter. In this sefer, it's one of those svarim, and even though he says this over here, he has backtracks and backslides a lot in the next 250 pages I've read since then. But I'm just using this book as a springboard. I'm not going to pass on everything he says in the sefer, but it's a very good sefer, very comprehensive. We disagree with some of the things he says, nonetheless, a lot here to we can learn from. So let's now just sort of go back to our general focus of how we ought to relate to our non-observant brothers and sisters. So, as we had mentioned in our introduction last time, we have to try to do our best to bring them closer to Torah mitzvahs. So the concept of avos osa ava, bring them back with chains of love, and to try to approach them with peace. And I found, and this is the experts in Kiruv say, that the only way to try to bring them back is with love. No, it's not going to work otherwise. I have to tell you a story. As you know, I was on a plane just last Thursday, and I met someone introduced him to me, a son-in-law of the Nesivus Shalom, the Slonim Rebbe. And he's himself, his name is Weinberg, they were married cousins. He's himself a descendant of the previous Slonim Rebbe. He told me the following story, how his father-in-law, the Nesivus Shalom, was such an important mechanech in Eretz Yisrael. And at the time people were teaching and educating with strictness, he was only teaching with kindness. His the whole Nesivus Shalom, which is the most popular, I told him, and that's a very popular sefer, your father's sefer. My son has it and my daughter has it. In my house, I have two children so far still in my house, they both have the Nesivus Shalom. So it's obviously a very popular sefer. They teach it to girls' seminars, they give it out, and then the yeshiva is very popular. He speaks to the heart of Am Yisrael. He's interested in teaching through love and building up the child, not putting him down. And he told the following story that he heard from his father-in-law, that he was once in a certain place and the guys were up there with fire and brimstone. You're going to burn in Gehenna if you don't do this. And that was just, pays no attention. Can I pay no attention? Are they afraid of burning? No one's even paying any attention. And he got up. He said, the first thing he said was, HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves you. No matter who you are, Kaddish Baruch Hu loves you. What we said before, everyone starts to listen. Everyone perks up their ears. And he starts telling, in his own way, you should improve this, you should improve this. After the thing's over, the maggid comes up, I don't understand. When I was speaking, nobody was listening. When you were speaking, everyone was listening. What happened over here? He explained to him that you turned them off the first minute. That you're going to burn. Then they're just that kind of a generation was going to make an impact. I told him that Hashem loves them. They all of a sudden, they perked up. So this is the whole essence We have to say this to our non-observant brethren as well. We have to, we have the right to say it. Because most of them are Tinoch Shenishbo, whether technically yes or technically no, they're really, most of them are blameless. They weren't brought up. If you want to go through the technicalities, we spoke about that last time, not necessary. We have to approach them with love. Very, very, very important. And I believe that the Kiruv mandate is critical. That every person has the ability to do what he or she can do, you know, and some more, some less. No one can say, I can't do it. Because you strike up conversations with people, wherever it may be. You know, the famous plane stories. You know, and I'm sitting next to Chassidim. I wasn't about to, they'll try to do Kiruv on me, probably. But you know, you never know. You take on a domestic flight, you sit next to who knows who, you know, even an Israeli flight sometimes, a birthright, you know, you have all kinds of people on the plane. You have a conversation, you never know. At the workplace, neighbor in the building, you never know what you're going to accomplish. We have neighbors completely secular. We invite them, we invite them for Shabbos, they come in sometimes. You know, the big shilas, and I invite somebody if they're going to drive to you on Shabbos. It's a very serious question. And frankly, I'm against it, unless it's a very real chance of Kiruv. Just, you know, I'm going to invite them, maybe a little bit of Kiruv. That's pie in the sky. And whenever people drive, it comes at a cost. It's a cost-benefit ratio. If you think it's a really good chance of Kiruv, we can talk about inviting them to come, you can give you a place to stay, come before Shabbos. You know, they're going to drive after Shabbos home, you know it, and your heart's going to do it. But all right, there's something to be said for it. The Rambam writes, there's a concept of kind of like an Eis Lasos Lashem, which may apply here as well. But just to invite them socially, when the chance of Kiruv is really remote, not so simple if they're going to drive. This guy lives across the hall. You know, he's not driving, he's not even taking the elevator. He's just walking across the hall. Then he comes in, he puts on a yarmulke, and you never know. Who knows? Who knows? We just don't know. Shalach lachem chal pnei amayim. It's a long shot, but you never know. So I think everyone should try. You know, we have these opportunities, and people live next door. We should try our best to do what we can. So this is, I believe, an overview of how we should be dealing with these individuals. This saver that I'm using as my springboard, then after this overview, how it goes into, he has details and details, 33 chapters of details before he has his next 150 pages plus, 150 pages about Birurei Halacha. So yeah, this goes forever. But I'll just give you, since I read a good chunk of it, we'll give you some of the highlights. His first chapter talks about tefillah and brachas. Can you count such a person for a minyan? Rav Moshe says yes. Even someone who denies God counts for a minyan. Where did he get it from? The source. What's the source for a minyan? All right. The 10 people who constitute the miraglim. And Rashi says the miraglim said the kichotakumi menu. They believe that God was not omnipotent. Therefore, they were denying the essence of God. And after he came, despite that, that's the source for a minyan. I have to tell you, Rav Moshe's psak stands in contrast to many other gedolim, including the Rambam himself, seems to disagree. But nonetheless, in a pinch, Rav Moshe is Rav Moshe. We live in America, Rav Moshe's country. So we have a right, I believe, to rely upon Rav Moshe to count anybody in a minyan. Especially when he calls Aviyah B'Mokom Evo Machlokes. You can have 10 people, and one of them is non from Jews. We don't have a minyan. We don't have a minyan. Well, you don't count. So that, you know, especially if the person comes in, you know, he comes in, he wants to say Kaddish. Can you have him say Kaddish? Another discussion. Can he say Kaddish? So the answer is he should say Kaddish. Someone else should say Kaddish with him. And someone can answer to both. That's, he tries to find ways how to, can you give an aliyah? So Rav Moshe writes, even the same Rav Moshe says anybody can count for a minyan no matter what, you cannot give him an aliyah unless he believes in two things. God, and that God gave us the Torah. Because otherwise, what's he saying? If he doesn't believe in Hashem or Nosin HaTorah, then it's meaningless words. Can't give him an aliyah. Sorry. Give him Hagbuk Lila, you know, if you have to. You know, I'm saying another speaking role. I don't give him, he needs a sky badly. He's in trouble. So he goes to these kinds of important. This is complicated. Guy walks in, then goes up there. Here I am. No, karate. Get down. What's the difference?
I think
it's in the Shulchan Aruch. Not so simple, but the bottom line is we've never used karate in the shul to take anybody down from the Dukhan. So he once had a guy who used to walk in here many years ago, 30 years ago plus, who I thought wasn't Kishim Mishal, was a claim. But different opinions as far as this is.
Yeah. We once had a situation where there was a private minion somewhere,
okay,
and we needed a kohen to duchen.
Right.
And somebody's neighbor is a kohen who's not religious.
Right.
So we looked it up, and I think we saw in the Shulchan Aruch that it doesn't matter if he's Shom Shabbos or this or that, if he's not a
Machal Kuna. Did you ask him if he goes to Levi's?
Didn't ask.
Yeah, but if he's not Shom Shabbos, he probably goes to Levi's. Ah, come on. He's not Shom Shabbos. He goes to Levi's. He's already, he's not allowed to duchen. That's a din. Whatever. I'm not questioning any private minyanim. That's not a, let's hope we get things right in the regular minyanim. Let's hope for that. Okay. It is important to have a positive attitude, as I mentioned before, towards these individuals. Here's the following shalom. Can you invite somebody into your house to give him a meal when you know he's not going to make a brach? So Shulchan Aruch says, nope. If someone's not going to wash, you can't give him bread. If you're not going to make a bracha, from Shlomo Zalman Paskin, you may. And he gives the following logic. What's the reason why you shouldn't invite him in? Because by inviting him in, you're causing him to do an aveira. What's the aveira? Eating without a bracha, eating without Netilas Yadayim, both rabbinical prohibitions. I'm not belittling them, but rabbinical prohibitions. If you say you're not invited, you're going to cause him to do a much bigger prohibition. You know what it's called? Lo sisna esachicha v'levavecha. He's going to hate you. Aside from the fact that he made a trip. So therefore, Rabbi Shlomo Zalman says, you should invite everybody in and not worry about it.
Can I ask a question about a different topic?
Sure.
Unrelated. Just in terms of co-workers, Jewish but not from any time, by our actions, we might cause them to do more of it.
That's very, very serious. That's not so simple that these things are allowed. We should try our best to avoid these types of situations. The way to avoid it, if it's at all possible, is to work through an intermediary, if it's possible. In other words, for example, you can tell the principal, I have to take off. They have, by law, I think they're required to give you off on Pesach and Rosh Hashanah. And then
I have no problem taking off, but let's say whoever's in charge arranges right. for a Jewish teacher to cover me, right. I'm not in control of it.
Right, no, of course you're not in control of it. So you go back to that same person and say, listen, part of my religion, the same way you're letting me off tomorrow because it's Passover, part of my religion is I'm not permitted to direct a Jewish person to work on Passover. So the boss is not Jewish, right?
Right.
Baruch Hashem. So I can tell you, since you're my superior, that this is what has to get done in the class. I'm going to tell you, but I'm not permitted to tell the other person directly. So the person will be courteous, and you'll just write everything down and give it to this person, and he'll take the piece of paper.
Then that's no longer.
That's considered already lifnei. It's already further removed. Now, in your husband's case, it's a little bit more difficult. And I get this question on a regular basis, emails, and it's complicated. It's very complicated. I mean, attorneys have this all the time. They take them off and they give work to another attorney. Let's try to do the same thing. Find an intermediary. Maybe what we can do is take his email, forward his email to a non-Jewish coworker. So this, I can't think about this now. It's Friday. I'm at the door. Take care of it for me. And then he'll forward the email to the Jewish person in London. And your husband's making kiddush. And then whatever's going on over there. That's probably the best way to go through an intermediary. That's the best advice I can give. Even that's not so simple, by the way, we're stuck. These are all serious questions.
It's in London, it's not Shabbos here, but it's Shabbos there.
I know that. I'm that's exactly the problem.
It happened to you with a few minutes before Shkia. He looked it up.
There.
And sent it right away, but I'm saying it could happen.
Right.
It was
10 minutes. Absolutely. Yeah, sure. Things can happen. Let's go a little bit further. A little further. There's a whole discussion here, the whole chapter called Hilchos Tznius. He's worried about people not dressing properly. And there's a whole discussion about how we have to stay away from these situations. There's 30 pages on this topic with all the chumras of tzniyos that you can imagine. and he passes without a question. You're not allowed to shake a woman's hand, which I don't think is correct. And you know, depending on the circumstances, he passes here. Yeah, that women are absolutely required to wear stockings, which I'm not opposed to. I think it's a very good idea, but to make it an absolute requirement, I don't know where he quite got that from. And
depends on the place.
Right. He says Bisman Azeh. He doesn't say Bimbalkum Plum. He thinks it's practice for the whole world. I mean, I'm not sure where he's coming from. No, doesn't say that. It's interesting that the subtitle, the subtitles are fascinating here. Hilchos Mechal Shabbos is my name. That's the first one. Tinach Shenishbo is the second one. And Halacha v'Hanhaga L'Balei Tshuva is the third one. How do Balei Tshuva conduct themselves, which is very, very important. All three are these subtitles of this beautiful, beautiful Sefer. And, it's a very good Sefer. It doesn't mean you can't have to agree with everything that he says. It's obviously coming from a different point of view. But he said you should close your eyes. You have to be careful not to take off your glasses if you don't see it. That's a very good idea. We're talking about Chilul Shabbos. Chilul Shabbos is a very serious problem of Chilul Shabbos. He tells the following shayla: a bris on Shabbos, non from family. Then people are going to drive. Shabbos, bris on the boys. One out of every seven boys born on Shabbos. What do you do? He calls out Vosna, postpone the bris. Can you imagine giving up the eighth day? Postpone the bris. As he calls from Avosna. And even though he's not so sure Avosna is right, what he does say is, if they're going to drive the baby to shul, that's for sure out of the question. If guests are going to come, that's extraneous to the bris. You take the baby in the car, forget it. That's what I would say. If you take the baby in the car, I can't do that. I'll come to your house to the bris. I'm not going to. But if others are going to come, I would do the bris on Shabbos.
There's no aid of it, not a shul set up in the Isaac.
Let's leave that out for the moment. Okay. Talks a lot about kashrus. How it's hard to rely, it's over 30 pages about kashrus. How it's hard to rely on non-observant individuals with respect to kashrus. Kind of he's coming from a completely different perspective. Mahadrin, mina mahadrin in kashrus. And the parents are not mahadrin. So that he says, you're not required to be mahadrin at the expense of a vulvi. You're not allowed to insult your parents because they give plain kashrus. You want mahadrin kashrus. When he quotes that sometimes non-Mahadran is not even kosher. You know, for example.
Sometimes Mahadran is not even kosher.
We won't go that far. That's what only happens in Muncie. The truth is, though, he quotes from Rebbe Yashiv, and I think it's true in America, too, that the Pesach is correct in this country. You can only eat glatt meat. Perhaps rare exceptions. If it's not glatt, it's probably not kosher. I'm not into chumras. But that's the reality, and this is because of marketing. It's nothing to do with the halacha. The word glatt came to mean something totally different. You have to be careful about. Fine, what about wine? The non-observant Jew touches your wine. Yes?
Before we go to what's the din of Memonis for somebody who's a Tino Shanishba as far as if they say they keep kosher?
So he's very down on it. He says, either because they don't realize what they're doing, they're not up to the nuances. They're not going to try to give you something to trade purposely.
So let's say you have a mashgiach who has a set of rules. You have to check for A, B, C, and D.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not so religious. Is that such a person allowed to?
Every mashgiach is a Shomer Torah mitzvah, I hope.
For many years, the OU was pending in out-of-town areas where there were factories, where there were no Orthodox Jews. They relied on conservative Jews. Because they said they keep kosher.
Yeah, at least they keep kosher. Hard to imagine doing that in these days. Hard to imagine. Anyway, here's one of the most important, which we spoke about in our previous part of this relationship series. Kibud Av V'Aim. The father and mother are not observant. What do you do? It's a difficult tightrope over here. You have to give them honor. Absolutely, yes. You certainly can't cause them pain. But at the same time, things we spoke about in our prayer, sure, they ask you to do this, that, the other thing, you're not required to always listen to them. It's not always what I call in my language a reasonable request. And the chapter I was reading now is a chapter on avelus. That's very serious. If someone passes away, so technically speaking, if the person is not observant, there's no avelus. Nowadays, he writes, most people promis Abel for someone, even if he's rebelled. What I tell people, frankly, is I really give them a choice. I mean, we can be liberal over here. If they want to observe the Shiva, they may. And ripping the garment is not considered a violation of Baal Tashchis. And, you know, not learning is not considered Bittul Torah, and whatever else, you know, not putting on tefillin the first day, we can be lenient about. But at the same time, if there's someone they don't want to, for whatever reason, and if you look, the person grew up from, rebelled, and I read in Shulchan Aruch, there's no Shiva, I don't want to give Shiva. So in that rare case, I would say, okay, you have a right to observe that technically halacha as well. The most important chapter that's coming up now, I'm just going to do a brief job. It's chapter Yud Tes through Chav Beis. It's four chapters. It spans a mere less than 70 pages, but I don't think I'm going to get through it in 7 minutes. So we'll try to see what we can do in this short period of time. This is a few highlights. Yeah, but we mentioned earlier that Lifna Evil or Sita and Mirshal. You're not allowed to cause somebody to sin. Now, aside from that, Lifna Evil is only in a case where he couldn't have done it without you. If he could have done it without you, there's a din of Misayeya. Misayeya Lidei Ovri Aveira, which is a lesser level of a sin, but it's still considered something important. Here he has Lifne de Lifne, what I told you before. What does Lifne de Lifne mean? That means I'll give it to someone else, we'll give it to that someone else. That's a lower level issue. Nothing, it's mutter, but it's certainly a lower level issue. Why is Misayeya prohibited? Lifne even means only if he can't get it without you. He can get it without you. So he gives four reasons. Tochacha, that you have to give somebody Musa, how much Musa, you know, like, and help him to do an Aveira. Two, it's Lifnei Iver. It's not really Lifnei Iver, but it's on a rabbinical level of Lifnei Iver. That's what some say. Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh LaZeh. You're responsible for him. Or what he calls Hilchos Tshuva. You have to try to get everyone to do Tshuva. So you shouldn't be sending him in the other direction. What about a Muma? Are these, that's the bottom line. Do these things apply to a Muma? So, some say, someone who is a mumar, there are certain leniencies. The shach says, when it comes to a mumar, ein o chayav lahafrisha. You're not required to stop him from doing an aveir. Ask the note of Yehuda, Yisrael shechata Yisrael. What do you mean you have to stop him from doing an aveir? These are fundamental points. So, some say you don't have to stop him. If he's a shogeg, this guy is amazing. That's exactly what the Dada Buddha says in his Dogo Merivova. Okay. Others say that he's not a chicha b'torah v'mitzvahs. That's the best answer. The Bi'ur Halacha calls it. He's not a chicha b'torah v'mitzvahs. You're not obligated to give him tochacha, ocheach tochichas amisecha. He's not amisecha, and you're not required. The Rosh Hashiva Rabbi Osman Shalita told me that when he used to visit his uncle in Tel Aviv, when he was a bacha, so right next to the neighborhood, every Shabbos, when he goes to the Shabbos, would be washing his car. And it bothered Rosh Hashiva so much. You know, in New York, guy washing his car, hopefully he's a goy. It's Tel Aviv. He didn't know what to do. He went to Rabbi Yosha. Rabbi Yosha told him, you have absolutely no obligation. You want to talk to him. Try to be a car, it's one thing. You have no obligation to try to stop him, presumably because he's not a chicha, but Torah of a mitzvah. It's not his fault. Not that he's a bad guy. He maybe wasn't brought up properly, but still there's no, he's not considered to be a chicha, the Torah of the mitzvahs. So these are some of the important issues. What about a tinok shenishba? Again, so you should try to avoid causing him to do an aveira. Could be a possibility of lifnei iver. And if you should try, if you can't, to stop from doing the aveira. He's trying. We don't know. Because the Shach said you can give an Issa to a Mumar, does it apply to Tinish and Ishba or not? But he's on the one hand, we don't know, is he a Chicha B'Torah V'Mitzvahs? These are all the various questions which Rav Moshe talks about in one of his Tshuvas, and he goes back and forth. And there's a Bir Halacha who talks about it as well. And he thinks it depends upon a number of complicated issues that we can't go into right now. So it's again complex. Okay. So we try our best, whenever possible, to stop this individual from doing aveiros. But how far do you go with this? Can you rent an apartment? You're a landlord. Can you rent an apartment to a non-from Jew? He's going to use the apartment to do all kinds of bad things on Shabbos? The answer is yes. That's too far removed. I repeat, if you're a landlord, you shouldn't have an oil renter from Jews or goyim. You'll go bankrupt, first of all. But it's permissible on the ground that it's too indirect. Right? You're going to rent.
In a restaurant or something, and you have the same problem with the people not making a
profit. Right, right. There's a whole discussion about that. We assume that's permissible. Permissible. So we assume that. Okay. Fine. But you know, you have to be, it goes to a whole series of issues. Okay. Now, we want to go a little further in discussing tochacha. We mentioned before, anytime a Jew sins, you're supposed to try to give him a little mussar and try to tell him he shouldn't do it. But someone who's not on misecha, there's no mitzvah of tochacha. That's what we saw from the Bi'ur Halacha quotes from the Tana de Eliyahu. And that's the basis of what Rabbi Yosef Paskin as well. And he writes in the same Chavetz Chaim as well. And the Maram Shik says so as well. And of course, the Minchas Chinuch says something along those lines. Yeah, so there is an issue. You know, if it's a Tinech Shenishba, then Misvara, he writes, he's not considered to be Amisech. But that's not so simple. That's not so simple that a Tinech Shenishba is not included in Amisech. It could be he's not Amisech, as we mentioned last time. No, it's not his fault. It's just not Amisech with Torah of a Mitzvah. It's just not. So this is a very, very big question. And beyond that, if you know for sure that he's not going to listen to you, just keep quiet. Mitzvah Shalom Adav Hashem Anishma, Chazal say. Why? It's going to cause hatred. And you're causing to an aveira of what? Sinner. Two, he might take the cover and actually hurt you. And number three, you're going to cause him to do a worse sin. Now he knows about it, it's going to be a worse sin. You have to know what the circumstances are. Every case is a little bit different. Even in case where you do tochacha, nowadays it's very, very hard to give mussar, because the people there in the non-observant community, they don't like the Torah, they're far away from it. Maybe you just leave it alone. But once in a while, we should make what we call a hafganah. Not because you have to try to bring them other people back, but to protect the street. You don't want the street to become a street of Chilul Shabbos. That's a different story. You have to be careful not to cause extra problems. These are, you know, obviously a judgment call. Very difficult judgment call. Okay. Let me just give you a few more minutes. To discuss how far this goes. Must you stop someone from violating an iser? Technically speaking, yes. Stop someone from doing an aveira. But the question becomes, what about this individual who's far away? Again, our last topic is a topic called Kiruv Rechov. Mitzvah Rabbah! Someone who's a Makarev has a tremendous amount of schar, and that person, you're a Makarev, and his children's children are considered to be to the credit of the person who's the Makarev. It's Aves Hashem, after Echa Kamocha, Kibinus Chasadim, Ein Lecha Chesed Godol Mizeh. The greatest chesed is to help somebody come closer to Kadosh Baruch. It's Hashavah Saveda, Phil Saman Adam Reyechos, Hatzalos Nefoshes. It's everything. It's the best thing to do it. The best thing to do it. Now, how do you do it? How do you do it? It becomes very tricky. You have to make sure that you're not going to be hurt by it. You're not going to, you'll go down. To get involved in argumentation and polemics, not going to work. Not going to work. Rather, you should try your best to bring these people closer in any which way possible. At the same time, in theory, you mechal Shabbos for this Hatzolah. But nowadays, it's given the realities of today's world, It's not like it was found in the Shulchan Aruch, we're going to take away by the Mishnah, they're going to baptize a person, and once they baptize them, they can't get them back. It's a different reality in today's world than it was then. So therefore, we are not Mechal Shabbos, but we should spend time in Kiruv. Rav Moshe wrote in a famous psak that just as we are required to give 10% of our money for tzedakah, so even a yeshiva boy, Rav Moshe passed, which is against what he says over here, even a yeshiva boy should be involved in Kiruv up to 10% of his time. If he learns 10 hours a day, for 1 hour he should be spending his time in Kiruv, which could also be learning. Partners in Torah. It's a wonderful organization. They people are talking on the phone. It's great. If you're learning 10 hours, up to 1 hour, you should just talk to a partner in Torah. You never know. You don't know where it's going to lead. It's a tremendous chus. So just to summarize, this shurim, obviously just scratching the surface here, the relationship that we have with non-observant Jews is quite complex, both from the technical perspective, which we spoke about primarily last time, and from the practical perspective, which we spoke primarily about this time. And he keeps saying so many times, if you have a problem, ask by a rov. He sees too many times, especially Balei Tshuva, they're too strict, and they don't give enough honor to their parents, and ask a rov before, and don't extrapolate from one case to another, because a small little change can lead to a different psak. And there are many complexities in terms of how we relate to these kinds of situations. So, this relationship is obviously a complex one, and obviously it's a new one that we didn't have 200 years ago. I happen to see there's a group called the Orthodox Forum that's sponsored by our yeshiva. They have an annual meeting and then they publish the papers afterwards. So it's on this topic for this year. This is the topic. So I was reading some of the interesting things. There's a certain rabbi named Rabbi Shurla from Petach Tikva. He comes from a completely different place. He says, yes, we halachists are comfortable with our own terms. And he rattles off the terms. Tinuk Shenishba. He knows all the terms. He says, but none of them work today. So therefore what? He tries to create like a new model. Because the world has changed, and now the majority of the people are not observant. We have a Medina Yisrael, so we have to run a whole country. So we have to look for new models. We can't look to the old tried and true model that we've been spending time on in the last couple of weeks. It's not going to work. So he tries to create a new model. And he says, look, I mean, much of what he says is the same as we've been saying. But he's just working with new models. That's always a little bit dangerous when you go to new models. You don't know where they're going to lead. Let's give you an example of how different people see these questions from totally different points of view. So however we see it, we should try our best to Mekadosh Shem Shemayim while maintaining the Kavod HaTorah. And the Kadosh Baruch Hu will give us the Siyata D'Shemayim and the wisdom to know how to balance it properly. As the Chazon Ish said, the Chazal did in their time. We have to try we're much smaller than the Chazal. We're very little people. We're nonetheless duty-bound to try to find the proper balance in terms of how we deal with individuals who are not yet Shomer Torah Mitzvahs. Shavua Tov. Everyone's invited to the Siyum Mishnayos next door.